Welcome to today's edition of the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show podcast.
All right, hour two, Clay and Buck kicks off now. Everybody, thank you for being with us. Talking about the Trump trial in the first hour. We'll get back to the latest with that for sure. Also, some drama up on Capitol Hill. Marjorie Taylor Greene and a couple of others now are thinking about replacing Speaker Johnson. Meet the new speaker, same as the old speaker. I don't want to say we told you so, but we kind of told you. A lot of you agreed, some of you disagreed, but now we see changing out the speaker when you have a razor-thin majority in the House to begin with isn't going to give you all the things you want. We'll talk about it, though, and there's some interesting ideas and options out there, to be sure. I think it's an interesting debate. Nothing else allows people to vent some of their irritation with the Rhino Caucus, such as it is. But we mentioned this story to you. I wanted to return to this one for a second. NPR, which is best known for being, I think, the radio station you hear in the background that is intended to help make you fall asleep. It's really good. You know, they all kind of talk like this, and they have this very sort of, you know, mellow way of speaking, and they just go, and, you know, you kind of get dazed into it. I haven't listened to a lot of NPR. Occasionally I'm in a car, somebody has it on. NPR has suspended that editor we mentioned who claimed left-wing bias at the outlet and said that they had lost America's trust. NPR suspension here of this guy after he had a scathing online essay embracing a, because NPR has embraced a progressive worldview, prompting, quote, this is from CNN, Clay's favorite place, last 24 hours.
Yes.
They want him suspended. They want Clay locked up. That's what we know about CNN. Prompting fierce right-wing backlash, calling for the defunding of the public radio network. And, yeah, they got into some of this. I have to say, I'm not surprised they did this at all. I didn't really process at first that this guy still worked for NPR. At some level, though, I think, Clay, one of the lessons here is for people that wake up and recognize, oh, I don't work for a news organization. I work for a propaganda entity that does the work of the left and the Democrat Party. They know that, and they expect their employees to know that. And the whole game is everybody knows, but nobody's allowed to talk about it. This is true, by the way, at CNN. This is true at ABC News. This is true at all of these places, New York Times. So did he really think he was going to get away with it? What do you make of this?
So I look at this in the context of his name, by the way, is Yuri Berliner, I think, which sounds like a made up name. But Yuri Berliner found that there were 76 registered Democrats in the Washington, D.C. NPR office, and there were no Republicans. And he raised that as an issue because they claim that they care about the overall fairness of their doctrine. So my first thought is we have to legitimately get to the case, Buck. We're not one single dollar of taxpayer money, direct or indirect, goes to fund NPR. If they can work in the marketplace and if they can make a living as all businesses do, more power to them. The government doesn't fund Clay and Buck. We stand alone as a capitalistic venture based on you guys listening and sponsorship dollars and everything else. So this to me is number one. Number two, the new woman that they hired, I don't know if you've seen some of her tweets, but even by NPR standards, this woman is crazy. This woman's name is, this is the person who's suspending Yuri Berliner. Her name is Catherine Mayer, or Marr, I'm not sure how you pronounce it. She tweeted this, lots of jokes about leaving the U.S., and I get it. But as someone with cis white mobility privilege, I'm thinking I'm staying and investing in ridding ourselves of this specter of tyranny. So I didn't even know that cis white mobility privilege existed. I guess that means if you're white and you can walk.
I was going to ask you this. Is it economic mobility or physical mobility we're talking about here? Is it you have the financial means to leave a place, or is it you have the actual physical ability to walk out of a place, as in being more mobile? Do we know?
I, Oh, that's a great question. You may be right. I didn't even think about it as an economic, way of analyzing things. I thought it because I tied this in with, you know, they did away with the use of the disabled list in Major League Baseball. You knew this, right?
Yes.
They now have the, I think it's the injured list, because they found that the disabled list was considered to be not respectful enough of people with disabilities. So I believe they've changed the name in Major League Baseball to the injured list. Here's a couple of Catherine Marr's other, it's a good question. I don't know. Maybe some of our woke translators out there know the answer to that. Here's a couple of her other tweets, Buck. I do wish Hillary wouldn't use the language of boy and girl. It's erasing language for non-binary people. She tweeted, these are her tweets. This is the person who's in charge of NPR. I'm an unalloyed progressive and supporting Hillary this time around. She also said the best part of Arizona GOTV is my Biden grandpa hat. So she's walking around in a Biden for president with one of those massive N95 masks on her. These are things that she's tweeted. So this woman is far left wing.
She's a communist.
I saw this.
The communist is running NPR. Yes.
I saw this not only in the specter of this guy gets suspended for telling the truth, which is NPR is a rigged news organization, but that he's being suspended by, to your point, effectively a left-wing communist who is ostensibly arguing that she is representative of the American public. We just no American taxpayer dollars. Yesterday was tax day. I cut checks. I was not happy to cut. I bet you did too. I know a lot of you out there listening did too. The idea that any dollars that I send in would go to support NPR in any way, direct or indirect, is fundamentally unacceptable. It's time to truly cut them off.
It's fascinating too that the people that are so obsessed with diversity and inclusion, just as words, we all know what that means. It's really just, race-based Marxism,
cosmetic diversity.
It's cosmetic diversity, right? But put that aside for a second. The people that are obsessed with diversity and inclusion think it's okay that NPR, which does get some public funding, those say, it's not a lot. Okay, if it's not a lot, why do you get any? Right?
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
You know, how about we get, you know, oh, well, the Clay and Buck show, the government just kick us like, you know, 5-10 mil. You know, it's no big deal. Just kick us 5 or 10 mil. It's not a lot, right? I mean, why not? 87 registered Democrats, 0 Republicans working at NPR. How can anyone think that a news organization that does not even feel the need to have a token Republican, right? Doesn't even feel the need to have, hey, like, we hate Bob who sits, or Bill who sits in the corner and is our, like, crazy right winger, but at least we know what half the country thinks if we talk to them. They don't even want that. They want, like, a Maoist cultural revolution level purity in that newsroom. They want it to be only people that all agree and see the country the same way, knowing that half the country thinks, I don't think people that work at NPR are like, have like difference of opinion. I think that they're a lot of times delusional and mentally ill. Like, I think there's something wrong with them. I think they have anxiety disorders that they actually think are political positions. And that's where we are as a country. So I just think we need to be honest about it.
And think about how much self-selecting is going on if an organization that has as many employees as NPR is 100% has Democrats. And this is why the diversity and inclusion people to me are full of it. The only diversity that matters is diversity of thought. And what they're doing is using cosmetic diversity as a cover to have a lot of people who look different and think the exact same. How does that benefit any organization?
Well, and the way diversity and inclusion actually functions at institutions that are considered elite, at least in terms of, you know, it's hard to get hired or hard to get admitted, thinking about schools in that context, right? The truth of a Harvard, and NPR is not Harvard by any means, but similar idea, same mentality at work. The truth of an NPR is they think that there is more to be gained from the perspective that you get of having a white, you know, let's say a white guy whose, you know, parents, you know, went to Cornell or something and were doctors, sitting next to a black guy whose parents went to, you know, went to Dartmouth and are doctors. They think that that, okay, well, there's diversity there, but they don't think that there's diversity if you have somebody who grew up, you know, in rural eastern Kentucky, really poor.
Yep.
They don't think of that as diversity. They don't think of that as expanding perspective. So, you know, two people that would have lived very similar lives and often share very similar perspectives, but are different, you know, ethnicities. That somehow to them brings different perspective to the conversation that's far more valuable than somebody who, for example, grew up really poor and disadvantaged and somebody who grew up really rich. Like they don't view that as necessary at all.
And this guy, Yuri Berliner, is a Democrat. So he's just not leftist enough for the Democrats. It's not like he's a Republican who was pointing out the flaws that he saw here. He's just somewhat of an honest liberal, not a progressive, an honest liberal who looks around and says, we don't really have a marketplace of ideas here, and we're failing as a result.
You know, I think of ideologies in this way, you know, and this has been true of honestly, of communists all along, is they want to infiltrate an organization, a country, an entity, and then they need uniformity. They need to control the entire thing because their ideas stink and their results are horrible. And so if there is any other approach that could be at hand, they will not have power. So this is why they need absolutism. They need uniformity. And I've said, it reminds me, you know, I went and took my little nephew and my family to the, we had an amazing alligator tour. You know, one of the big problems in the Everglades is they have these, there's a bunch of different invasive species, but a big one is the boa constrictors, right? They've got like pythons, Burmese pythons, boa constrictors, and they eat a lot of the native wildlife. And the thing is, they're not trying to establish a balance in the ecosystem. They're gonna like kill all the native species, birds and different things, and because they will take over. That's why they're an invasive species. Lionfish, the same thing on the reefs here. That's why they go out, they hunt these lions. You ever see those things? They're crazy looking lionfish.
Or the carp up in the Midwest that have gotten into so many of the lakes and rivers all over the Midwest to take over and dominate this invasive species from Asia.
Communists ideologically aren't invasive species. They do not seek, this is why it's so fascinating, they talk about like diversity and inclusion and all this stuff, whatever. They actually do not seek parity, representation, or anything else. They want ideological across-the-board conformity, which is why the New York Times, NPR, look at the same story, Clay, that plays out in newsroom after newsroom over the last 20 years. No, somehow, it never is the case that they go, oh my gosh, I woke up one day and the Washington Post was so right-wing and only far-right MAGA hat-wearing. We don't think that way. They, the communist Democrat, think in terms of it can only be my way, and the existence of other ideas is a threat to the existence of my ideas. It's all or nothing with them. And that's what you see at NPR, and that's what you see at campus after campus, news organization after news organization, and now, unfortunately, company after company.
And it ain't getting better. And it's interesting that when someone speaks out, and a lot of people say, you know what, he's right, they immediately try to silence him. And that's happening lots of places, probably in your employment offices out there. You've seen things like this happen.
And they don't even feel the need to address the underlying critique, which is obviously a problem. You have a news organization that only has Democrats and that's getting public funding. That should be an embarrassment. No, the problem is that he talked about it. Not allowed to talk about it. You shut your mouth. You do the work of the Communist Party. Call yourself a good, loyal, progressive Democrat and you go forward. All right, look, if you're a firearms enthusiast like I am, or you have one in your life, I want to tell you about this incredible firearms manufacturer, Bear Creek Arsenal. This should be your new firearms manufacturer of choice. Veteran-owned and operated, based right here in Sanford, North Carolina. Bear Creek Arsenal makes high-quality firearms at an incredible value. I mean, I know some of you out there probably have ARs that you paid, I don't know, $1,000, maybe $1,500 for. You can get a Bear Creek Arsenal rifle that is every bit as good. And I was out at the range testing them out this weekend. I had my most expensive AR, which is crazy expensive, and my Bear Creek Arsenal. Bear Creek Arsenal is every bit as good of a tool, every bit as good of a firearm, and it's a fraction of the price. I'm telling you, when you see the value, the craftsmanship, the precision of Bear Creek Arsenal, you're going to love it. Amazing pistols, gear, rifles. Go check it out for yourself. Bear Creek Arsenal. .com/buck. That's the website. Go to bearcreekarsenal.com bearcreekarsenal.com/buck. Use my name, Buck, as your promo code. Get 10% off your first order. That's bearcreekarsenal.com/buck and use promo code Buck for 10% off.
Clay Travis and Buck Sexton, making sense in an insane world.
Welcome back in, Clay Travis, Buck Sexton Show. We're going to be joined by Julie Kelly from Washington, D.C. She's been in the Supreme Court this morning listening to arguments surrounding a huge portion of the Jan 6 charges and whether or not the application of that statute to January 6th is or is not permissible under the law. And spoiler alert, it sounds like those charges are going to get struck down by the Supreme Court. That's significant not only for everyone out there who is charged with Jan 6 related violations relating to these statutes, but also because it is half of the four charges that have been brought by Jack Smith against Donald Trump. So it's possible that Jack Smith is going to lose half of his case on the Jan 6 federal prosecution, which may never go to trial anyway. But it sounded, Buck, and we'll talk to Julie, see if she agrees, like this was going to flip and get struck down by a 6-3 margin at least. And some of the liberal justices sounded like they were open to the idea that this had been misapplied against Jan 6 defendants as well.
Prosecutors shouldn't think of their job as highly creative, right? The law should be straightforward. It shouldn't be, hey, I don't like this person, so let me find a way to interpret, in bad faith, the words on this page so that I can, you know, put someone in prison and pretend that this is somehow justice. That is what they're clearly doing. I mean, when they're talking about the law at issue here, it was not meant to be used against people like the Jan 6 protesters, rioters, whatever you want to call them. It was not meant for that purpose. So extending it to that purpose should be something that prosecutors are very slow to do. But, man, the Conrad Black thing, I really, we should dig that up a little bit, Clay. I got to go back and read. It was a long time ago. I mean, it was, you know, over a decade.
I know the name, but I don't remember the particulars of that case.
It was one, when you read what they did to Conrad Black, it was, they basically said that they didn't like the way he was running his company and therefore he was guilty of honest services fraud. It was one of the original put out a political hit on a conservative media person. One of the original instances of that. So let me dig into it a bit because I think it might illuminate some of what we're seeing right now, but it was a sham what they did to that guy.
Want to read on it now that you brought it up.
Yeah. You know, we cut through the noise and the nonsense coming from the mainstream media and spend as much time sharing the truths as we can, especially truths that no one else is going to tell you. And when it comes to the stock market, which can feel very opaque, that's what Mark Chaykin does. He cuts through the noise and the nonsense. Mark worked on Wall Street for 50 years. The guy's got a lot of experience. And he even invented three new indices for the NASDAQ. And he's predicted some of the biggest market shifts of the past decade, including the recent focus on AI stocks. Mark says many Americans are about to miss out on a critical turning point in this AI frenzy. He's calling it a new dawn for U.S. stocks and predicts dozens of specific companies will be impacted in just the next 90 days, which is why Mark has agreed to share one of his favorite AI stocks to buy now with our listeners. He put everything you need to know in a new presentation you can watch for free at 2024AIStock.com. That's 2024AIStock.com, paid for by Chaykin Analytics. We're joined by our friend Julie Kelly. Please check out her Substack, Declassified, with Julie Kelly. And Julie, appreciate you being with us. Let's dive right into it. Fisher v. United States. Supreme Court heard oral arguments today. Before we get into where you think the judges are going, can you just give us background as to what's at issue here and why it's such a big deal, not just for Trump, but for a lot of J6 defendants?
Right. So this relates to the government's use, DOJ's use of 1512C2, obstruction of an official proceeding statute. This was passed in the wake aftermath of the Enron Arthur Anderson scandal. It has to do with evidence tampering or document shredding, as we saw in that case. What the DOJ has done for the first time ever is weaponize that statute to criminalize political dissent and charge now roughly 350 January 6th protesters with this felony offense, punishable by up to 20 years in prison. It finally, 3 years later, has made it to the Supreme Court and oral arguments. Joseph Fisher was one of these defendants charged. The district court judge, Carl Nichols, is the only one who dismissed this count against him, and the DOJ appealed that, which is how now we got to the Supreme Court oral arguments today.
Okay, Julie, I listened to part of this. I saw the questions. I wasn't able to listen to every minute like you were because you were inside of this courtroom. But I have been in the Supreme Court before and been able to forecast by watching and listening and seeing body language and everything else what I thought was likely. Based on what I saw, I see this as a 6-3 at worst win that would strike down the use of these statutes. Do you agree or disagree with that? How would you assess your read of the justices' questions and where their opinions may lie as a result?
So just to clarify, I wasn't in the courtroom today.
Oh, my bad.
No, that's okay. Fortunately, you can cover all of these proceedings on the Supreme Court website and also C-SPAN, and it's just easier to do it that way. I will tell you, I was a little worried, I think, and disappointed at first with Fisher's attorney's presentation. I didn't think it was as strong as it needed to be, and the questions were tough as to the two different parts of the statute that are now in question. But I sort of agree. It could be 6-3. It might be 5-4. Amy Coney Barrett, again, seemed a little bit unclear as to her position, which might be fine. But look, the idea that you can take an entire code of the U.S. Criminal Code, 1512, which only has to do with tampering with evidence or witnesses in judicial proceedings, and clip out this subsection and set this aside from everything else, to make it sound that official proceeding, which is used throughout 1512, meaning a judicial proceeding, not a function of Congress, to carve that out and not only now take the novel approach of using it to congressional proceedings, but of course only apply it to those people involved in the events of January 6th, which, as you guys know, this became quite clear during the discussion today.
Actually, Julie, can we jump in here real quick? Because we wanted to play for everyone to hear Supreme Court Justice Gorsuch, this is cut 28, dealing with exactly what you're talking about, which is, oh, so only in this congressional instance is obstruction a problem. Play it.
Would a sit-in that disrupts a trial or access to a federal courthouse qualify? Would a heckler in today's audience qualify or at the State of the Union address? Would pulling a fire alarm before a vote qualify? For 20 years in federal prison.
The actus reus does require obstruction, which we understand to be a meaningful interference. We'd also have to be able to prove that they acted corruptly, and this sets a stringent mens rea. It's not even just the mere intent to obstruct. We have to show that also, but we have to show that they had corrupt intent in acting in that way.
So mostly peaceful protests that actually obstructs and impedes an official proceeding for an indefinite period would not be covered?
Not necessarily. We would just have to have the evidence of intent. And that's a high bar.
They intend to do it, all right.
Yeah, I just think he nuked their whole argument here. I don't know how they get around this. There's absolutely no legal basis to. She's saying, oh, well, corrupt mens rea or something. Yeah, they're obstructing. They want to obstruct, and they're obstructing. Well, really, it seems to me, Julie, what she's saying is, well, if, you know, it's climate change protesters, we like them, so we're not going to throw them in prison for 20 years.
That's exactly what she was saying, and I'll take this a step further. I just emailed last week the spokeswoman for the D.C. U.S. Attorney's Office, the federal prosecutor handling now 1,400-plus J6 cases, and I asked her, have any of the pro-Palestinian, anti-Israel demonstrators who have done the same sort of conduct over the past 6 months, especially in Washington, D.C., and unlawfully entering Capitol buildings and disrupting Senate hearings, have they faced any federal charges, including obstruction of an official proceeding? And she told me no, that all of these cases are being handled by the local D.C. prosecutor, which means they will be local offenses. So I was a little surprised that Elizabeth Preligore was not better prepared to answer the selective prosecution angle. of 1512C2 and the potential slippery slope, which the justices seemed concerned about, that if you carve this out and turn this into a felony punishable by 20 years up to prison for someone screaming during, a proceeding of the Supreme Court or a Senate confirmation hearing or anything we've seen, especially the past 6 months. But she's saying, oh, no, that won't apply. And they're asking, well, why not? Well, I just don't think it will. That's okay. Not going to satisfy the inquiring minds of the justices.
Julie, as always, you're doing an incredible job covering this. And I have to give you credit. Years ago, you started raising this as a potential issue. And I think a lot of people shot you down with, oh, there's never going to be any impact on this. And now it seems likely that the Supreme Court is going to strike down, I think, prosecutions under this statute. If we are correct about that, and in June, the Supreme Court issues an opinion, you said maybe 5-4, 6-3, I think you would agree that it's likely that they are going to strike it down. What is the impact then? Where do we go from there?
Well, thank you for saying that. That's why today was so gratifying, because I have been covering this for over 3 years and hearing from, more importantly, the defendants and their families and what this obstruction felony charge has destroyed their lives and families and bankrupted them. So what it will mean for them, they will get to go back and say that the Supreme Court has reversed the DOJ, Matthew Graves, the D.C. U.S. attorney, and 17 judges on the D.C. District and Circuit Court who upheld this count even when they knew, understood how vague it was, how broad it was, how selectively it has been applied, and the slippery slope that it creates. These defendants now will get long-awaited exoneration, and hopefully they will have this charge reversed. They will be released from prison. They'll have the charge dropped. They won't face prison time. And this will represent a huge black eye to the D.C. federal court system and the U.S. Attorney's Office in D.C. and DOJ for abusing this law to, yes, create a set of political prisoners who only have been subjected to this felony when no one else has. And as Elizabeth Freiligar said today, no one else will be, just J6ers.
Julie, how does it apply to Trump? So we know that they're trying to still rush through this case. I believe this would knock, in theory, two of the four charges that Jack Smith is trying to bring against Trump out of the contemplation, right? What would that mean as you see it for that trial in the event that we're right and this ruling comes down? Because to make it like kind of Trump specific, I believe I'm correct that two of the four charges against Trump for January 6th related charges in D.C. are these aspects that are being examined.
You're exactly right. So this is has great jeopardy to Jack Smith's criminal indictment in Washington against Donald Trump, which of course is now indefinitely postponed until the Supreme Court renders an opinion on presidential immunity. Those hearings are next Thursday, by the way, for people who want to tune in. But this does jeopardize his indictment, and it should. If the Supreme Court comes back and they need to very clearly say any congressional proceeding, including the events of January 6th, does not apply to the meaning of official proceeding in the entirety of 1512, including 1512 C1 and C2. And this has to do with destruction of evidence, evidence impairment, document shredding, et cetera. So if they come back and they say that January 6th is not an official proceeding as it relates to 1512, then I don't see how Jack Smith continues to keep those two counts in his four-count indictment. There are other ways the Supreme Court could hedge and protect what's in Jack Smith's indictment. You heard a little bit of Amy Coney Barrett, which made me nervous, sort of reiterating Jack Smith's talking points that the electoral certificates represent a document or record in an official proceeding. So hopefully the court will come back with a strong resolution to that as well. But, you know, this will be also, I should have added, Special Counsel Jack Smith and his team, a black eye to him as well for bringing such a vague, untested statute and a presidential, unprecedented criminal indictment against Donald Trump.
Julie Kelly, Declassified on Substack. Please subscribe to it. Julie, we'll be talking to you a lot between now and the election. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, guys. Really appreciate it.
She really is doing fabulous work, Buck. If anybody's out there and wants to keep their eyes on all of these cases, I don't know of anybody that's working harder and giving more interesting takes than Julie right now. You can take advantage of the MyPillow $25 extravaganza sale going on right now. Great deals, perfect way to experience so many of their fantastic products. You'll find items like their MyPillows made with the all-new Giza fabric, just $25 each, or their two-pack multi-use MyPillows for just $25, or their six-pack towel sets for the same price, just $25. Maybe you'll want to try the sandals with the summer coming again, just $25. Dozens of items at the price point. Use our names, Clay and Buck, as the promo code. It's the MyPillow extravaganza sale. Just go to MyPillow.com, click on the radio listener special square. For these $25 deals, you'll get free shipping on orders over $75. Use the promo code Clay and Buck to access the sale. That's MyPillow.com, promo code Clay and Buck.
Keep up with Clay and Buck's campaign coverage with 24, a Sunday highlight reel from the week. Find it on the free iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back in, Clay Travis, Buck Sexton Show. Appreciate all of you hanging out with us as we are rolling through the Tuesday edition of the program. And obviously the stories which we're going to dive back into right at the top relate to everything having to do with legal processes being put in place against Trump, both in New York City, but also the argument in Washington, D.C., which would directly impact him. And I really think I don't in the same way, Buck, I'm curious how you would analyze this. When the Supreme Court came out 9-0 and said, hey, you can't take Trump off the ballot, Colorado. And that obviously killed attempts to take him off the ballot in Maine and anywhere else in the country. I think they tried to do it in Illinois as well. And there were a lot of left-wingers out there that had been telling their audiences, oh, this is very legitimate. Man, this is a really strong opinion. Then you get slapped down 9-0. If, as I think is likely, Buck, the Supreme Court comes out and says, hey, these January 6th political prosecutions have been impermissible, you could say even illegal, under the law. How are all those people going to respond who've been saying that anybody who argued these Jan 6 cases were illegitimate and that the people were being unfairly prosecuted going to be able to sit down and talk to their audiences again? I guess they'll probably just say the Supreme Court is corrupt, but there are a lot of L's getting stacked here for left-wing liberal interpretations of what the court is going to do.
I see two things with this. One is, unfortunately, the anti-Trump audience in America will forgive any lie, any transgression, any amount of bullcrap as long as it was intended to hurt Trump, right? So it doesn't matter. If you say, oh my, look at Rachel Maddow with the taxes, right? If you say, we are 30 days from me exposing that Donald Trump is actually a lizard person, I'm going to pull his mask off, you're going to see he's actually a lizard, he's got the little forked tongue, the whole thing. And 30 days passes, and sure enough, you don't have the goods. They don't get mad. They just say, okay, well, you were trying to take down Trump, right? It's part of the mania. It's part of, I think, the disorder that people have of anti-Trumpism, that it becomes something that is always self-justifying. So that's one piece of it, right? As long as you're trying to hurt Trump, they'll forgive you for anything. They won't forgive isn't even the right word. That's fine. Just as long as anti-Trump, they're on board, even if you overpromise and underdeliver. Because look at Russia collusion for 4 years. Everybody who was involved as a Democrat in Russia collusion, even your buddy Eric Swalwell, they all got, elevated effectively by the Democrat Party. That's part one. And then just part two, real quick. I mentioned this in the first hour. If what Trump did was so bad and so clearly illegal, they wouldn't have to keep concocting novel and illegitimate legal theories to get him. You know, it'd be pretty straightforward. He did X, we prove Y, Z is the result. Instead, it's always, well, if you look at this and you talk about that and, you know, presto, it's always a magic trick to prove Trump guilty of something when it should be ironclad. And it's the opposite of that.
We come back at the top of the third hour. I'm going to play a clip. Stephen A. Smith basically addressed this, and I thought it was somewhat interesting because I don't see him as a particularly partisan guy. But one of the questions we've been asking from the get-go is, how is this going to, this case in New York City in particular, going to be received in a general sense? And we talked about, and we'll reinforce, most people are not actually going to be following this minute-by-minute trial as many of you are going to. You're super plugged in. You're engaged politically. Most people don't do that. They just kind of have a generalized sense about Trump and what is being attempted to do, what they're trying to do to him. I think what you just hit on, Buck, and what I think we're going to play for you at the top of the third hour is a lot of people just see this as a panic. Because if Trump was really so bad, why can't you just beat him in an election? If Trump is such a uniquely Hitlerian figure, why can't you just line up, go head to head against him, and beat him? And there are more polls out of the swing states, and Trump is up in six of them. And I think there is an increasing panic. Democrats never thought that we would be here. They didn't think we'd be here in mid-April before the November election with Trump leading in many of the swing states. They never thought they would be here. And that's going to lead them, I think, to start to make more irrational decisions. You know how when a panic sets in, a lot of times you don't make the best decision for your side because you're allowing emotion and fear to govern the choices that you make? I think Democrats are starting to get there. I think they know that they've hit an iceberg. And they're seeing the Titanic take on water, the SS Biden. And I don't think they have a good game plan right now.
This is my concern, is that they're going to get increasingly erratic, vicious, and desperate as this election gets closer. Because I'll be honest, I'm surprised at how resoundingly their anti-Trump lawfare has backfired thus far. That could change. It doesn't look like it will anytime soon. And if it doesn't, Clay, they're going to be beyond pull out all the stops. What comes next?
Great question. We'll talk about it when we come back. Final hour, Tuesday edition.